हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 73, verses 1 to 18. Prahlad Maharaj's experience at the Gurukul. When Hiranyakashipu heard from his son about devotional service, he decided that his small boy had been polluted by some friend in school. Thus he advised the teachers to take care of the boy so that he would not become a Krishna conscious devotee. But, you see, even though they don't want to be Krishna conscious and they only want to become materially successful, they're still using the Gurukul system.
I wanted to ask, we try our best to make them Krishna conscious. It doesn't always work.
Well, that's the problem here, is that he's worried that they're being polluted by some friend. Mm-hmm. So many times we're the pollution. No. No, it's just it's. Means we try our best, try to be Krishna conscious. So it's always a combination between the sadhana and the culture. So sometimes we're good at the devotional aspect and not the culture, or the culture and not the devotional aspect. You know, so that, you know, that combination there. Plus, there's we always have to work into it. There is the individual you're working with, right? They are their own, you know, person. So their actual interest and desire in Krishna consciousness, how strong that is also part of the equation. So Prahlad Maharaj, we know he's very well fixed and very strong. So therefore we see, despite the environment he's going on, because he had the proper association, proper instruction. And so he has that maturity that he's following that. So basically it's just a matter of when that maturity will kick in. So that's going to be always individual. It's never said that it will be easy. Right? But it's just a matter of, that's the duty we try. Yeah. But it always has its effect. It's just a matter of, is the effect there early or is the effect there later? The ideal is they catch it early, and then by the time they hit 16, then they're quite, you know, they start maturing in that and just develop from there. Some, then they're exposed to it early, they take to it, but then when they hit the teen years, they kind of go off the rails. Then sometime later in the late 20s, early 30s, they kind of come back into it. Once reality strikes, you know, like that. So then, but you know, it means that time is lost, but it's still gained. It means at least that maturity was gained, and that commitment is there. So then, it still works. It's just we're shooting for the ideal that they take to Krishna consciousness and progress like that through. So that makes sense. But there's always a chance, because the living entity, they still have free will. The great saint Narad Muni said, the demons headed by Hiranyakashipu accepted Sukracharya as their priest for ritualistic ceremonies. Sukracharya's two sons, Shanda and Amarka, lived near Hiranyakashipu's palace. Srila Prabhupada comments, beginning of the life story of Prahlad is recounted as follows. Shukracharya became the priest of the atheists, especially Hiranyakashipu, and thus his two sons, Shanda and Amarka, resided near Hiranyakashipu's residence. Shukracharya should not have become the priest of Hiranyakashipu. Because Hiranyakashipu and his followers were all atheists. A brahmana should become the priest of a person interested in the advancement of spiritual culture. The very name Shukracharya, however, indicates a person interested in obtaining benefits for his sons and descendants, regardless of how the money comes. Real Brahmins should not become a priest for atheistic men. Right? So, as a Brahmin, he shouldn't be involved like this. But because of his difficulty with Brihaspati, I think. Yeah, therefore, then he's taken to becoming the priest for the demons. So it doesn't. It's not that it doesn't come without its difficulties. And now and again, he wonders why he's doing it. But you know, it's the path he's chosen. So the point is that if the Brahminical culture is for spiritual development, and then along with that, since there's an occupation, it develops some facility. But it's not about the facility, it's about the spiritual benefit. That's the idea of the Brahminical life.
Right.
Yes.
So can we say that Hiranyakashipu and his family, they also follow Brahminical culture?
Yes, kind of. Yes. But without the interest in spiritual elevation. In other words, they follow the form of Brahminical culture, but not really the mentality. Because Brahminical culture means it's for understanding Brahman, trying to elevate yourself to the transcendental platform. So he's following the rules and regulations of the Varnashram without the Daiva part. So that's why it's technically called Asuric Varnashram. So that's why he has there, he has his priests, they do their rituals, they do their samskaras, they do all the standard things that are required. Just that they're only interested in it because of the material benefit it gives. Like, we'll talk about things that we're not worried about the material benefit. So then the mistake may come that because we're not interested in the material benefit, we don't do it. Like samskaras. It's just part of the purificatory process. So then we'll think, oh, because we're not into the karmas, so therefore we don't do that. But the difficulty is that all those elements are very useful in Krishna consciousness. You know, intelligence and health and stability and all these things. So the samskaras give those. So the devotees perform the samskaras because, one, that's the recommended process. But two is all those facilities are useful in Krishna consciousness. While the demons, they do them because they're useful in material. Okay? Because if it's the activity that will be performed, technically the focus is on the activity. Now, the difference between the karmis, jnanis, and bhaktas is what you're going to use the results of that endeavor for. Right? So technically, your basic knowledge and your skills will be the same between all three of them. But what's different is that for the devotees, they take it farther in that it's understanding the relationship with the Lord, therefore the attitude of service to the Lord, therefore the attitude of trying to please the Lord. Vasudeva remains the same. But you see is that the Sankarshan Prajumna Adiruddha are taken to a higher level. But in all cases, the Vedic culture, the Prajumna aspect is the same. The Vasudeva aspect is the same. It's just a matter of how much knowledge. So the jnanis, the karmis will know a certain amount. They'll know the basic Vedic, you know, things in the culture and everything. So they'll basically know the religion without much philosophy. Then the jnanis will know the philosophy, but may not know the... They'll generally practice the religion, but sometimes they'll restrict that. You know, so you get that problem of either way. But for the devotee, they practice the religion and know the philosophy, so it's actually complete. So when we make comments about the karma or the jnana, or about the philosophy, the knowledge and the activities, then that's only we're making the comments when they're performed without connection to Krishna. But sometimes the mistake is taken that we don't follow any ritual, we don't follow any knowledge. But if we don't follow ritual, we don't have any knowledge, but we're engaged in activities of, how you say, expressing sentiment, then there's every chance we'll fall into the trap that Sahaja is in. Because we don't have religion and we don't have philosophy. You know, so that's, you know, because Prabhupada only comments on one or the other. You know. Like that.
So instead of a win-win situation, we have
lose-lose, yeah. So instead of, okay, you have half, you miss. So if you had the religion, that's good, but then the problem is you'll it'll only have sentiment. And if you have the philosophy, that's good, but then you'll have the speculation, because the two of them together then balance each other. The philosophy keeps you from being sentimental, the religion keeps you from being speculative. Like that.
So
they see the all the activities and knowledge of the Vedic culture as useful for their goal of sense gratification. Because from artha comes, and from dharma comes artha, and then from artha you can get kama. Now moksha is not really high on their list, so they're not worried about that. But they're interested in kama. But they're smart enough to know that you can't have enjoy without having money. And money comes from duties. You know, it's like the young couple, they don't know anything, they don't have anything, they don't really have much support, but they're just thinking, just because of the love for each other, and they just go off, that everything will just work out perfectly. But they forget that that's the last, 5 to 7 seconds of the movie. You know, as they pull back and the music wells up and it says the end. You know, they don't catch it, that's it. No one's seen more than 10 seconds of that. You know, so it's a problem. While you see, like in your older cultures, and the boy gets educated, he gets, you know, gets situated in an occupation, has facility, then he gets married. You know, so that's the religion. It keeps things from just being speculative. Oh, it'll just be this, that. But it remains the sentiment that you know, just that's enough. So that's the idea, is you have to combine the two, then it works. Yes.
What is equally except the Shraddha Samskara?
No, that's there. But here, just before we get into that, make sure it's connected to here. Because we're not discussing samskars. We're discussing the concept that the demons are accepting the form of the Vedic culture simply because of the material benefits. So the devotees don't know the benefits, that's why they'll reject. Or they don't actually know enough about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to know how it fits in. So the understanding of the religion and the philosophy in certain technical points is weak. Taste funny?
Is it from the pump?
Might be from the pump instead of the other. So it'll have... Maybe it's been sitting... Is it new or it's been sitting a while?
It's new.
Oh, it's near the bottom. That's not... I won't... Does that make sense? Yeah. So the samskaras, those who understand it will do it because it's a benefit, but those who don't will just say, oh, it's just karma. But the point is if you're married having children, that's not already karma? And if it's all about, okay, well, we're connecting that to Krishna, but then since the acharyas recommend the samskaras, then why would we think that that's karma?
If you're walking around, you already have karma.
Yes. So that's the idea, is that one's already in that field. So then what would be the reason to not do, seeing the Prabhupada regularly mentions it like that? So that's what we're talking about, is here, is these levels of you have the bhaktas who follow religion and philosophy fully. Then you have the karmis and jnanis who accept one or the other. Then you have the vikarmis who don't accept either. you know, but by fortune they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, but then there may be difficulties if they don't refine their lifestyle and develop these things. Right, because it's just like nowadays the talk is about community development and all that, but community means householder life, means artha kama and moksha. I mean artha, dharma and kama. You have to have those three. But the problem is people talk about economics. They'll finesse the sense gratification because most people don't have it. You know what I'm saying? Householders, they talk about it, but go to the house and have lunch. Then you'll understand. They don't have sense gratification. They don't know how to cook. They don't know how to take care of their life. They don't know how to live a lifestyle that does facilitate sense gratification. And they don't have dharma, so all they do is have artha. Why? Because that's all that's left over from the West. The non-Vedic background, they just follow that, and how much sense gratification that has, then they do that. Because most sense gratification is you know, breaking the four related principles, so they don't know how to have sattvic sense gratification. You know, it's like, you know, you have to know what you're doing to get that. You know, it's like, you know, everybody's going to these regular old restaurants, and then there's the one, you know, around the back, down the alley and all that, that the people in the know about, and, you know, they go there. But not very many people know that place. You know what I'm saying? So, is that what it is? Yeah. Yes. Meaning? What do you mean by brahminical qualities? Yes, like that. Because those are the qualities by which they work. How they use those qualities for karma, jnana, or bhakti, that depends upon the quality of the Brahman. Brahman means that they follow the lifestyle recommended in the Vedas. Right? So they follow that. So they're doing that, but what we see is they're more interested in artha. You know, because technically they shouldn't teach for Hiranyakashipu because they're atheists. One is you generally avoid kings in the first place. Kings are always trouble, like that. You know what I'm saying? You upset a parent, you know, they may make some snide comments. You upset the king, it can be a little bit worse, like that. So it's never recommended for Brahmins to work for kings as a first option. Right? If you have the nature that you want to work on that, you have the material desire, then you do that. But if you don't, you know, it's just like, what was his name? Tun Sen. He was trained in music by Haridas, you know, in Vrindavan, the Vrindavan Haridas, Bunky Bihari temple and like that. I think they're Nimbarka line or Vishnu, I'm not sure what line they are. And so after he was trained, he was extremely good. So then Haridas asked him, so do you want to develop your devotion for for the Lord, you know, based on your music, or do you want to be known for your music and get the benefit from that? And so he said, I'd like to, you know, get the material benefit. So then he told him, okay, then you should go to Delhi and go to Akbar's court. Because he was that good, you know, to be the it means I think of the Hindus, Akbar had only him, Tun Sen. But Muslim musicians, he had 30. There were 30 Muslim musicians to, you know, create the variety and this and that. But he only needed one Tun Sen. So he was that good. Means there was, on the material platform, in the material social scene, there was no one better than him. In the spiritual, there were others, but like that. So then he went there, and I don't know how he got in there. Some story came, saying something, and then Akbar was immediately impressed, and so he got. So that's the point, is he has the skill of a singer. But now, does he want to use it devotionally, or does he want to use it for karma? That's the whole point. You have your choice, what you want to do with it. You understand? Yeah. Yes.
But
some like meaningful qualities are like humility and kindness towards the living entities. And
yeah, yeah. But so. they were dealing very nicely with Prahlad. Yeah. See, we have to see. What's happening here is generally we're used to demons being Danavas. It's very obvious, kind of rough and tough, you know, like that. So we can go, yes, this guy's a demon, right? Bad activities, rough character. The daityas, they are sophisticated character. You know, the character in one sense is high grade, the qualities they're using, and their skills and everything like that. So if you didn't know by seeing their activities and seeing the activities of someone else in the Vedic culture, you'd think that they're the same. So the point is demon means that they're using their facility for sense gratification. That's what makes them a demon. They're not interested in using their activities for elevation. So this idea is that, you know, oh, you know, when I'm in my house, I can do whatever I want. No one should control me. This, that. That's not actually a divine quality. Because the point is yes, in your house, no one outside should be telling you what to do, but you would be regulating your life according to the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Yes, you'd be doing that yourself. That's the meaning of Grihastha. You can't do it yourself. That's Brahmachari. Grihastha means he's matured. He can do it himself. Like that. Does that make sense? That's the idea.
Sometimes you can fall into the concept that I'm elevating myself and I can drown people around me. So that means that basically if you're really elevating yourself, everyone around you also elevates along with you.
And the point is your elevation is not dependent upon the others.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're elevating yourself at the expense of others, then it's not spiritual elevation.
We say that those Brahmins, they wanted artha.
Yes.
And what would be the difference in the goals between artha and kama? Because at the same time, we can say that they wanted kama. It was coming from.
Yes, there. I mean, otherwise, why have artha unless it's going to be kama? But the point is those who are performing, the standard would be you're performing dharma, and then you're going to, with the facilities generated, with the art generated by that, you'd be using it for continuing your dharmic lifestyle. So what is the natural form of use of the kama that would be used? But you wouldn't be your focus and consciousness. But the point is, if you want to enjoy, you have to have artha. To have artha, if you're smart, you know it comes from dharma.
So it depends where you start.
It's,
like
yes,
you can start,
it's the same.
From dharma, or you can start from,
yes,
kama and then go on.
It's just a matter of where you go. See, is that most who start with kama, we're used to, they never get beyond that. They're just gross, self-centered people. Then there's those who are more sophisticated and know if everybody works together, then they can get more sense gratification. And then when you get into the philosophies of how good, and you introduce trying to work, use good qualities in that, then you have even a better karma, right? It's all because it's extended. The rasa is... See, dharma is a rasa. Art is not a rasa. Kama is a rasa. So kama, dharma, and bhakti, those are rasas. Right? While artha and moksha aren't rasas. They're connected, you know, like that. You extend kama, you get artha. Because artha is just a facility for kama. Does that make sense? And moksha is just the platform by which you can therefore be nicely situated in bhakti. You understand? So they generate facility for doing those rasas. Well, dharma in itself, then dharma, you know, nourishes dharma. You do dharma, it gives you a taste. I'm religious, I'm doing the right thing. You can feel good about it, you know, because it's based on the qualities. So, but it still won't be satisfying to the soul on its own. But in other words, that's why if we comment on the West as, you know, that they have all the facilities, they're successful. Basically speaking, in no way, shape, or form are they successful. They may have some money, but that's only because they say they have money. Because if you look at the papers, somehow or another, it's like permanently recession. You know, it's been going on now for when did it come? 2004 or something? It hit, or 2008? It was like strong like this. So, you know, it's just it just doesn't go away. You know. So the thing is how are they and what do they enjoy? You know, the ingredients you go into a nice shop. It's hard to find good ingredients. I just saw there's some article that some guy did research that I forget what it is. A ridiculous amount of the olive oil on the market's not olive oil, even though it says it's virgin. It comes from Turkey. They bring in this particular oil from Turkey. Tankers come in, dock in Italy. Then they take it and have a method of processing it. And then they bottle it there, so then it's Italian olive oil. But actually it's Greek something, God only knows what it is. But this has been a problem since the time of the Romans. So when the Roman Empire was there, they had a department that did was to check the olive oil to make sure it wasn't being, you know, how do you say it? It wasn't fake. You know, so it's, you know, they have 2,000 years experience. They know how to make it you think it's olive oil. Like that. So you do have ones that are, but you also have companies that it basically never is. You know, so it's like, and who gets the good stuff? Who gets the things? Who gets the ingredients? They're too expensive. Who knows how to combine those ingredients? Even if they did, who has the time to eat them? You know? And even if you do have the time to eat them, who do you eat them with? There's no one there. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point is they have all this facility. Yes, you have your nice Porsche, but you're stuck in traffic next to the guy with the jalopy. You know? Where is the sense gratification? That's the whole point, is that they're talking about it, but it's like Prahlad Maharishi will say, it's only heard about happiness. But they're so proud that they think their heard about happiness is better than everybody else's, even though the basic things of that, they all have. You know? Outside of their Western culture, most places around the world, they kind of know how to cook and eat. And, you know, they have relations, they have families, they have, you know, all these kind of things. Smoke. Okay.
The topic was okay.
Yeah, no, I can't hear. People are getting bored? What's happening?
No, getting
sentimental.
Oh,
I see. Yes, yes.
That's the sakhi kebab.
Yes, yes. It's just hearing about Prahlad Maharaj.
Olive oil.
Separation.
Yeah, yeah.
Very painful.
Yeah, very painful.
You might be getting the paper.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They won't be. It's just they don't use Italian. Okay. Okay. Yes. So that's the whole thing, is that rasa is in those three places, right? Vaikuntha rasa, what's it? Swagiya rasa and Partiva rasa. These are what's tasted. So the point is, if you're nicely just situated in pranamoy, you don't actually get any rasa. That's why it tends to be very boring, and it seems philosophical, it seems to be great and wonderful, but what do they actually get? So that means they're either on their own, there is a higher principles at the higher end of those people, they do have the element of dharma, they're supposed to give in charity, they're supposed to that, like that, so they get a little taste from that, you know, community and that. Or it's lower that without anybody knowing they're engaged in sense gratification. Like that. You know, so They, on its own, it won't support anyone. Just like the Vijnanamoy won't support the jiva. You know, because without, if it's only the platform that you're the soul, it won't give any taste. The taste is there, is that it's not material problems, but it won't satisfy because there's no spiritual base. Because there's no rasa. So the demons here are smart, that they know that sense gratification is the place where they want to be situated. But to get that, you have to have artha, and have that, you have to have dharma. So they perform their duties, everything, so that's there. Narad Muni continued, Prahlad Maharaj was already educated in devotional life, but when his father sent him to those two sons of Sukracharya to be educated, they accepted him at their school along with the other sons of the Asuras. Prahlad certainly heard and recited the topics of politics and economics taught by the teachers, but he understood that political philosophy involves considering someone a friend and someone else an enemy, and thus he did not like it. Right? He was reciting, he was going through, in other words, his lessons are going nice. We don't hear that Sundanamarka made a complaint, he's a bad student, he's not learning the things and all that. There, you know, this is just how is it the devotional side came along, right? So it's because you understand the devotional, learning the mundane is easy. Like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, politics involves accepting one group of men as enemies and another group as friends. Everything in politics is based on this philosophy. And the entire world, especially at the present, is engrossed in it. So when we say political correctness, we mean how to correctly be situated on one side or the other. Right? People don't, you know, though they claim to be educated, they don't actually look at the etymological meanings of things. Right? The point is that when we say that means then there has to be a party that's for something and a party that's against something. If we said one has to be cultured, one has to be these things, that's another thing. Because then you can use that politically or not. But political correctness is political. Right? In other words, it's correct politic. Right? They're thinking it's, you know, correctness that happens to be including the political. No, it's the other way around. That's the mode of ignorance. It reverses things. The public is concerned with friendly countries and friendly groups, or enemy countries and enemy groups. But as stated in Bhagavad Gita, a learned person does not make distinctions between enemies and friends. Devotees especially do not create friends and enemies. A devotee sees that every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai Vamso Jiva Bhuta. 15:7. Therefore, a devotee treats friends and enemies equally by trying to educate them both in Krishna consciousness. Of course, atheistic men do not follow the instructions of pure devotees, but instead consider a devotee their enemy. The devotee, however, never creates a situation of friendship and enmity. Although Prahlad Maharaj was obliged to hear the instructions of Shanda and Namarka, he did not like the philosophy of friends and enemies, which forms the basis of politics. He was not interested in this philosophy. Right. So for us, it's just, for the niti, just means practically what you do in a particular situation. How you deal with the mechanics of it that will be successful. But it's not that you have to consider this is an enemy, so you have to conquer that. It's a matter of what makes this successful. You understand the difference? So when it, niti, therefore when it's applied in the political form, then what's opposing to what you want to do, that's the enemy. So therefore, how to make friends, how to break up friends, all these different things, these are all part of the political system.
Divide and conquer is not neat.
Divide and conquer, no, that's what's you there, but the point is it's a matter of why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. Is it to establish Krishna consciousness, or it's... Yeah, like that, yes. So that would be an example of this friends and enemies. Mm-hmm. That you're dividing and conquering, that you're considering it that there's enemies. But if you're looking at it that there's a situation in which there could be Krishna consciousness and then some people are making a difficulty of Krishna consciousness, how to deal in such a way that those who aren't Krishna consciousness can not affect those who are. And therefore, then you can put the pressure that being Krishna conscious is appropriate. Mm-hmm. So that would be your principle that you're working on for divide and conquer. But what they're teaching in divide and conquer is, you know, your friend, you know, you are with your group, and who you're conquering is enemies. Mm-hmm. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nard Muni continued, "My dear King Yudhishthira, once upon a time the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, took his son Prahlad on his lap and very affectionately inquired, 'My dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all the subjects you have studied from your teachers. But so it's not just, you know, you like or not what's the best that you studied. That means the idea is, even here, they're demons. They're studying the literatures, but it's to be to point of practical. So it's practical. You can use it. So therefore, of all these different things, what did you find was you found to be the most practical and most important to you? Right. So it's beyond even here this education, because it's based on the Vedic principles. It's about the practical application. They're not satisfied to leave it simply at just some theory. Srila Prabhupada comments, Hiranyakashipu did not ask his young son anything that would be very difficult for him to answer. Instead, he gave the boy a chance to speak plainly about whatever he thought might be best. Pladmaras, of course, being a perfect devotee, knew everything and could say what the best part of life is. In the Vedas it is said, Yasmin vigyate samam evam vigyatam bhavati. If one properly understands God, he can understand any subject matter very nicely. Sometimes we have to challenge big scientists and philosophers, but by the grace of Krishna, we emerge successful. Right? Because if you understand Krishna, you understand how everything works. So it doesn't matter if even the area that the person is discussing on, they won't understand the principles it works on as good as the devotee. Like that. You know, so that's the point. You can say, no, but there's so many technical things, but the technical things aren't actually the basis of their philosophy. Right? That's the point, is that when you get down to it, it has to be certain fundaments that are simple. And so, because they don't understand those, therefore, all their calculation and all the other parts are faulty. Does this make sense? Like in science, they don't know what's time and space. Therefore, they can't actually discuss their philosophy on a very elevated level. They keep it down in the mathematical level because then it sounds very elevated. You can write equations on the board that no one can understand. Right? They don't even generally use numbers. It's all funny shapes and letters and other things like that. So, but the point is when you get down to the fundamentals, how does that work, that they don't know. That's where the devotee knows more. So that's what Prabhupada says. It says, even though there's all these big scientists and philosophers, then by Krishna's grace we emerge successful because Krishna's knowledge. It is impossible, practically speaking, for ordinary men to challenge scientists or philosophers concerning genuine knowledge. But a devotee can challenge them because the best of everything is known to a devotee by the grace of Krishna. Krishna is situated in the core of everyone's heart as the Supersoul, dissipates all ignorance from the heart of a devotee. As a special favor, he enlightens the devotee with all knowledge by putting before him the torch of light. Pladmaras, therefore, knew the best of knowledge, and when his father inquired from him, Pralad gave him that knowledge. Pladmaras was able to solve the most difficult parts of problems because of his advanced Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he replied as follows. Right? So, when it says how to be successful, therefore, someone who's trained, the more nicely you know Krishna consciousness, actually the more successful you can be in the world. It's just many times the more successful you are in Krishna consciousness, the less you're worried about being successful in the material world. But they can, as we see by all these great devotees in the previous cantos. You know, you don't get more successful individuals than that. Pladmaras replied, O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, right? So he knows the etiquette, how to deal properly and everything like that. So that's just there, but he's not doing it. He actually hates Hiranyakashipu. Because he's a devotee, he sees everyone on an equal level. So his father's dealing nice, he's reciprocating in that nicely, that's the etiquette. As far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. One should give up this position and go to the forest, Vana. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent, and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, you can imagine the look on the parents. It means even if they were devotees, if the five-year-old comes back from school having been there for some, you know, short time and says, okay, well, how is school? And he says this, you'll definitely be shocked. No? So you can imagine if you're a demon and your son comes home and says this. You know, so. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Prahlad understood his intention, and considering the question, what thing do you think is the best in the world among all those things learned, he gave his opinion. Since you ask me, please hear the correct answer. O best of the demons, I think it is best that those whose minds are disturbed by false absorption in me and mine should give up their house, the cause of degradation of the self, and after going to the forest, I think the best thing is that they should take shelter of the Lord. While one is still in the house, one should give up attachment to the blind well, and then go to the forest. Otherwise, even if one goes to the forest, one will still take shelter of the blind well. Because the whole point is taking shelter of Krishna. So the point of detachment is only valuable in that it allows you to become attached to Krishna. But otherwise, if not, one will just become attached to those things, as mentioned before. As what was it? Baladev Vidyabhushan was mentioning, that the neophyte tends to, though he engages things in Krishna's service, he gets attached to the things that are being engaged. So that's the point, is the blind well is there, one gets attached to it. Right? So the idea is the detachment is so you can move on to Krishna consciousness. But if you don't move on to Krishna consciousness, you just go to the forest, then you just get attached to the blind well out in the forest. You know, so a city well instead of a country well instead of a city well. You know, it's nice trees around, the birds are chirping, so it's so much better than the city well. But that's the point, is that he says a dry well, because the idea is I will become happy from sense gratification, but the jiva, the living entity, can't. They can be happy when the senses are engaged, connected to Krishna, so the senses are engaged. But if they're engaged without connection to Krishna, they'll never be satisfied. Right? So that's the difficulty. Because Hiranyakashipu, as we see, he took over everything. He was in control of everything, had everything the way he wanted, he still wasn't satisfied. He was still always angry. Because naturally, if you get control of everything, and you are in control, and there's no one contesting it, you would naturally relax a bit. You know, be a little bit more pleasant and accommodating, because you're so powerful, no one can oppose you anyway. So you can afford to be a little bit more, generous. Like that. No? So like that. You see that really, really powerful, it means materialists who are just so powerful, then they tend to be a little more generous. Because there's no opposition, there's no problem. But the point is he doesn't. Why? Because he thinks he'll be happy by sense gratification. And it's not happening. So he's just becoming more and more disturbing. So that's why Prahlad uses the term the dry well. Is that it's thought it will be nice, but it's not. Right?
The senses are always engaged in something.
Yes.
Technically. So
yes.
Either if it's not sense gratification, then it's something else. But still, you have to connect it with Krishna.
Yes, yes. So the point is it's always engaged. So therefore, we're careful to always engage it connected to Krishna. Because if we don't, then we won't be satisfied. No matter how nice it is, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's not nice. I can remember we would be on in South India traveling Sankirtan with Panchadevita and Akoyananda. And so... And the cook was myself, right? And so then, that was the first time I had been cooking like this. So I think we were eating khichdi every day, like that. And so, you know, it's kind of, a change would be nice. So then sometimes you get invited to these life members' houses. And, you know, especially back then, so they were very good cooks. And so the first day you'd eat there, it'd be fabulous. You know, the next day it was also nice. By the third day, you're wondering, where's the khichdi? Even though it was so excellently cooked, but it just didn't have the experience that the khichdi that was offered to the deities was. Now, if you could cook like them and offer it to the deities, then bingo. But, you know, but that was not the... So the point is, the offering to Krishna is what's wonderful. That makes sense. Senses will be engaged. That's the whole point, is why we don't accept the Mayavad's philosophy, is that you stop the senses. You know, or this whole thing, oh, the grihasas are engaging the senses, is nonsense. No, that's not the nonsense part. Nonsense is to engage the senses without Krishna. Engaging the senses connected to Krishna, what's the problem? Right. So, Srila Prabhupada adds, Hiranyakashipu thought that Prahlad, being nothing but a small boy with no actual experience, might reply with something pleasing, but nothing practical. Prahlad Maharaj, however, being an exalted devotee, had acquired all the qualities of education. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarver gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto maha guna manora tena sati dhavato bhahi. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications, because he is engaged by the mental concoction of material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Right. So, therefore, is that we say, no, but they're doing nice things. But why are they doing nice things? They're doing nice things for their own purpose, for their own sense gratification. So, therefore, they may be using sophisticated knowledge and skills and qualities and character, but the point is their purpose in using them is still for the same thing that the hogs and dogs are after. So you can't say it's something special. Right? Does that make sense? Because of that. And so, therefore, then, if they would use those good things for pleasing Krishna, then we would say that they're special. So, the argument that, no, but it's there, we can learn from this, that, blah, why do we need to learn from them? Because they're using the qualities in the improper way. So the difficulty is then if you're learning the skills and culture that they use from them, then there's every possibility that, you know, in catching the fish, you'll get wet. Right? While we have so many examples of prosperous personalities. It means, why would you want to learn something from some businessman who's not that big, you know, when you could be learning from someone who's emperor of the world? Which of the two would be more successful? Right? We don't even have examples. There's no example in Western history of anybody who's emperor of the world. They may be emperor of what little bit they know of as the world, or they accept as the world. You know? But it's like, what is it? Alexander. Right? So, from the Greeks. So, like there. So he has his area, but there's so much more of the world that he doesn't have.
In China, they have their own emperor.
Yeah, they had their own emperor.
Same time.
Yeah, the same time. And they when they talk about China, they talk about it as the world. Mm-hmm. It's the world. It means there's nothing outside of that. Around the edges, they know that, okay, you know, there's the Persians, there's the Indians and all that. But they're their world. They're kind of outside the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like that.
Even so, the Israelis say like that, so...
Well,
China's big.
That's true. Yeah, the hippies also said that. You know, it says, you know, the Romans, they were emperors of the world. Napoleon was the emperor. Then you had the Tsar. You know, so each one thinks that, but no one was actually emperor of seven continents, seven seas. You know, but in Bhagavatam, you have people like that. So these are the most successful. And how are they doing it? By these same qualities that we're looking for, turning to the karmis for. And we don't even know which qualities to look for in the karmis, because the karmis don't know either. Just by the modes of nature, they happen to manifest, but they don't actually know what's going on. So that's the point. You know Krishna consciousness, then you can know everything. Then you can actually see, okay, what is it to be gained here? You know, it's not that we can't see something there, but if we have our own example, why do we need another example? Right? If you have a better example, why use a lesser example? If you want to give example for others, you can use from in their category, but it's not that they're the gold standard. The gold standard is here in the Bhagavatam. And they also, because there's some aspect of it that is proper, therefore we see they're successful. But they're successful not because of their own, they're successful from following what is recommended. Is that therefore we come back again to Prahlad's point in Prabhupada's making, is that you know Krishna, then you know everything. You don't know Krishna, you actually don't know anything. Is that what it means? You know, because next life, what will that big businessman be?
You know?
Yeah. Where is, you know, on a good day? You know, where is Carnegie now? You know, that's the problem.
We don't know,
probably don't want to know. So-called educated philosophers and scientists who are simply on the mental platform cannot distinguish between what is actually sat, eternal, and what is asat, temporary. The Vedic injunction is asato ma jyotir gama. Everyone should give up the platform of temporary existence and approach the eternal platform. The soul is eternal, and topics concerning the eternal soul are actual knowledge. Whereas it is said, apasyatam atma tattvam griheshu griha medinam, Srimad Bhagavatam 212. Those who are attached to the bodily conception of life and who thus stick to life as a grihastha or householder on the platform of material sense enjoyment cannot see the welfare of the eternal soul. Right? So someone who's practicing grihastha life for the benefits of grihastha life, that is a grihamedi. Right? Because the activities of a grihastha, you know, is the common ground. Now, you're using it to understand Krishna, that's a devotee. You're using it to elevate yourself to the higher planets and all that, then that will be someone who's pious. If the only interest is the enjoyment you'll gain from it, that's a griha-medi. Right? So the whole point is piety or impiety is not the basis of what makes a griha-medi. We generally think griha-medi, someone who doesn't follow any of the rules or, you know, they're breaking all the principles, everything, that makes them a griha-medi. No, griha-medi simply means the house is the center of their focus. Because the Bhagavatam, when it talks about griha-medis, it always gives examples of people who are pious and following the Vedic culture. So that means griha-medi is more than being, you know, a nasty person. So you can be really nice, but if you're materially focused, you're a griha-medi. So technically, only devotees can actually be real grihasthas. Like that. Yes?
Can you say because griha-medis are those who are envious of others, they're basically like manipulators within society?
You can say that. You know, it's not that they aren't. They are. But what we're making the point here is that it goes a step further, that even he's nice and wonderful and, you know, a great guy, but if he's just focused on his house and all that, he's a griha-medi. Griha-medi means the central stick around, like when you tie a bull and they go around and, you know, they walk on the grains or they grind, press oil or different things like that. That thing in the middle, that's the medi. So if the center is the household life, not Krishna, that's technically a griha-medi. So the grihastha ashram has its lifestyle, right? So the one is living as a grihastha, right? But the mentality may be either a griha-medi, so it's entangling, or, you know, understanding the nature of the soul, so it's uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point. Okay. Not that if you take that further, people don't start to become, you know, grumpy. But it's the main point is they can be really, really nice people, but they're just centered around the house. That's a griha-medi. You know what I'm saying? So that's what, because we generally take it that bad means it's always gross. So here's being introduced. Again, because before we've seen it, we generally think of it as gross and it's left as that. But here now we're distinguishing the subtlety. like that. Because Hiranyakashipu and Paladmars are basically living the same lifestyle. But one's a Grihamedi and one's a Grihastha.
In one family.
Yes. So it's consciousness that makes a difference. It's not what you're doing.
Even not whom you are related to. So
Grihamedi
is not an ashram, you'd say?
No, Grihastha is the ashram.
Yeah.
And Grihamedi is the mentality.
Yeah.
Like that. So you can either be, you could say Aryan would be someone who's into, is uplifting and stuff like that. Grihamedi would be one who's entangled in it. But the lifestyle would be the same. Okay. It's the Aryan lifestyle, but they don't have the technically the Aryan consciousness. You know, so that's why then, we say we want to develop the communities, we want to do all these things, we have economics, but what for? Why? Oh no, but it's devotees. Okay, great. But why? You know, so that's where it starts to get into a problem. So just as, you know, sometimes parents have problems when their kid hits the age where they ask why on everything, the same way as because those kids never got answers when they grow up and you ask the same why, they don't have answers either, so they just do it because they feel like it.
Is it possible that the person may have proper sambandha and proper prayojana, but he's using the wrong abhideya, or it's the one?
If you're using the wrong abhideya, then you can't get the result. Right? Because the abhideya is what produces the result. So that means you have to have proper knowledge, proper application, then only you can get proper results. Do you understand? But you could say is that, you know, they mean well, so then if they mean well and it's consistent, then they will start to learn, because it's for Krishna, then they'll learn how to do it nicely. If they're not learning how to do it nicely, either they don't have the capacity, you know, they're doing as best as they can, then someone else has to engage them. Or, you know, they're nice guys, but they're not that determined in Krishna consciousness, so it's good enough. Yeah.
It's just a mode of nature. Trying to become comfortable, but it's not possible.
Okay. Turn on the fan, that doesn't work. Turn off the fan, that doesn't work.
Smoke doesn't work. No smoke, it's also bad.
Yeah, yeah. But you get the variety. Smoke and fan, smoke, no fan. You know.
No smoke, no fan.
Yeah, so all the different options are there. So that's what we're talking about.
That would be Arta or Kama.
But as he's saying, he's not enjoying himself.
It's definitely not karma.
So it's not karma. but the point is it's
it's moksha.
See, the thing is we could show you the method, but the problem is that unless you've grown up in that environment and have that kind of an attitude, it can't be used. You ever seen in the school those big monster fans? You use those. Because these have a problem because they're constant. See, is that if you have a nice breeze, it's not constant. It blows, it stops, it blows. So only time it's constant is when it's a storm. So you get sick. That's why if you don't turn it on, you sweat and you get rashes. You turn it on, you get a cold. You know, it's not. So the other thing is there, but then the point is you have to have that attitude of service and all that, where you can do that, and then the thing is, you know, how to trade, how to do the whole, like that. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. Is that there are the Vedic solutions, but then they require service and all these kind of, you have to use all these good qualities to get it. Here you just have to be able to flip on the fan. You know, like that, pay the bill, right? You know, that's all that's required. But the other one, you actually have to have these qualities in which you feel comfortable doing these things.
You don't have the other
kind. Yes, so that's what we're saying. So we're not trained in it, so we don't know how to actually get real sense gratification.
But you should include that in the course, Maharaj. You know, you're not doing the whole deal.
We're just happy that actually people are coming and sitting. You know, we've got the blankets put down. You know how many years that took? Before, the boys used to have to put them down like that. So now, you know, it's just so many years and they're able to do it. So now you have something, you sit down. So, you know, we're getting there.
10 years more and then.
Yeah. That'll work. We'll get there.
Years from now, AC will be there.
Oh, okay. That could work, yeah.
Regarding Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, it goes in this order because after having karma as such, normal karma, then you finally supposed to decide that you better go for moksha.
It's just you get frustrated. Either you get the sense gratification that's not satisfying because it's impossible to be satisfied, so then you go for moksha, or you get so frustrated trying to get the sense gratification that you get frustrated, so therefore you go for moksha.
So that would be Purnamimamsa?
No, because Purnamimamsa, somehow or another, they have this idea that they will be able to be happy if it's always nice.
So they actually stop at karma.
Yes, they're only interested in the Dharma Artha Kama, the Trivarga, like that, because that is one circle that you can move in, and so that's what they move in. But the natural thing is you will go for moksha, so even they'll become. So you start off with karma, you get frustrated, you go to moksha. When that doesn't satisfy you, then you go for atheism, you go for the Buddhism. And then when that doesn't work, then you come again back to the sense gratification. Does that make sense? Because the senses are there, you can't not engage them, but because they become atheistic, then all there is the senses. So then that's the natural place. It's not that they go to there and then go back to mukti. No, they come back around the sense gratification. Right? Because if there's nothing, then there's no authority, then therefore then sense gratification, you do whatever you want. So that's why also the modern culture and the modern academy prefers the Mayavadis or the Buddhists, because it actually subliminally supports sense gratification. So, yeah. Palladmayr has confirmed this by saying that if one wants success in life, he should immediately understand from the right sources what his self-interest is, and how he should mold his life and spiritual consciousness. So that's technically the meaning of going to the forest. Because we saw, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, you can go to the forest, but if you actually don't take up spiritual life, then you'll just become attached to the well. Right? It's just a different situation. So going to the forest means actually giving up that sense gratification is going to make you happy. That's going to the forest. Because Prabhupada talks about the forest, Vrindavan, Mayapur, like that. When you were talking about Mayapur, at that time there weren't a lot of trees here. So, yes, there weren't a lot of trees. Narad Muni continued, when Palladmayr spoke about the path of self-realization and devotional service, thus being faithful to the camp of his father's enemies, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, heard Prahlad's words, and he laughingly said, thus is the intelligence of children spoiled by the words of the enemy. Srila Prabhupada comments, Hiranyakashipu naturally became increasingly angry that his son was being influenced by the camp of the enemies. He therefore asked that saintly persons like Narada not be allowed within the residential quarters of his son, for otherwise Prahlad would be further spoiled by Vaishnava instructions. Right, because Narad Muni is part of the scene, because he's explaining it. So that means he's part of the scene also. He comes around, does things for Hiranyakashipu, whatever is, you know, expected and all that. But he's given orders that he's not allowed within the residential area where Prahlad is. Otherwise, then he may be polluted by that, right? Yes.
So it was because you were saying before that Hiranyaka took over all the, and was making the demigods do all these services and stuff. So, and Narada Muni was including that. So was Narada Muni coming over before that happened?
No. Why do you need to go over before that? He only goes place where there's opportunity to you know, increase Krishna consciousness. You know, he visited Kamsa, because then by pointing out things to Kamsa, Kamsa would increase his nefarious activities, so Krishna would come that much earlier. Right? So, but otherwise, then what need does he have? Point is, where was Prahlad and Prahlad's mother taking shelter while Hiranyakashipu was doing austerities? Right? Narad Muni's ashram. So therefore, there might be some kind of relationship between Prahlad and Narad Muni. But because Narad Muni is you know, a pure Vaishnav, he didn't, and a preacher, he didn't want him around the house, because otherwise then he'll make problems for, he's worried he'll make problems for Prahlad. Because Prahlad being a child, then he's easily influenced. Right, so here's that's the thing. We're worried about being influenced by the non-devotional. And here, you know, as a demon, he's worried that Prahlad will be influenced by the devotional, you know. Like that. So, interesting. Hiranyakashipu advised his assistants, "My dear demons, give complete protection to this boy at the Gurukula, where he is instructed, so that his intelligence will not be further influenced by Vaishnavas, who may go there in disguise." Srila Prabhupada comments, "In our Krishna consciousness movement, the tactic of dressing oneself like an ordinary karmi is necessary because everyone in the demoniac kingdom is against the Vaishnava teachings. Krishna consciousness is not at all to the liking of the demons of the present age. As soon as they see a Vaishnava dressed in saffron garments with beads on his neck and tilak on his forehead, they are immediately irritated. They criticize the Vaishnavas by sarcastically chanting Hare Krishna, and some people also chant Hare Krishna sincerely." The same guys?
No.
It seems like it's a younger group this time. They're not as how you say, mature in their gossip. They're just, you know, how you say? What's that one? Utsamayi, right? They're new at their... Yeah. It must be a bus or something, you know? Bus groups or something.
Sometimes I bring school.
But I'm just saying it's a group. It's not just people on the road. Okay, they criticize the Vaishnavas by sarcastically chanting Hare Krishna, and some people also chant Hare Krishna sincerely. In either case, since the Hare Krishna is absolute, whether one chants it jokingly or sincerely, it will have its effect. The Vaishnavas are pleased when the demons chant Hare Krishna, because this shows that the Hare Krishna movement is taking ground. The greater demons, like Hiranyakashipu, are always prepared to chastise the Vaishnavas, and they try to make arrangements so that the Vaishnavas will not come to sell their books and preach Krishna consciousness. Thus, what was done by Hiranyakashipu long ago is still being done. That is the way of materialistic life. Demons or materialists do not at all like the advancement of Krishna consciousness. They try to hinder it in many ways. Yet the preachers of Krishna consciousness must go forward in their Vaishnava dress or any other dress for the purpose of preaching. Right? So it's the purpose of preaching that you may use the Vaishnava dress or use the karmi dress. It's not because, oh, we come from this karmi background, therefore we should use this karmi dress. Right? Or that's preaching. No. It's a matter of, it's about the philosophy. So it's dressing how they will be comfortable. But that means it's about them, not about what makes you comfortable. You know, that's the thing, is that they're saying it's about the other people, but actually it's about what makes themselves comfortable. You know, so that is, yes.
Sometimes to be more effective, you have to be comfortable also. In a sense, you know, it depends on the
okay, but still the point is about the preaching.
Yeah.
Preaching is the essential point. Preaching is the essence. So if you'll be more comfortable, but then you can't say that it's on the same platform as somebody who is comfortable with whatever is actually best for the preaching. Like that. Yes, of course. If that's acknowledged, then that works very nice. The problem comes is when one tries to equate them all as equal. In fact, dressing in the devotional would be considered less. These kind of philosophical presentations, these are a waste of time. Because you're trying to present something lower as higher, and something higher as lower. So then it takes on the quality of ignorance rather than being, you know, you can present it very intellectually, but it's not taking on the proper attitude. Yes, so you feel, the point is within whatever it is that should be worn, you're comfortable within that. That works. You know what I'm saying?
Technically, like you said, they have no idea what sensory is, and then they're trying to see a comfortable situation. But then it's like, oh, poison from beginning to the end, because they have no idea what's fire, and then they kind of recreate some situation, but it's actually poison for themselves and for the people around.
Yes, that's why people who are generally more smart are more skeptical. Because they see that there's nothing, you know. Because if you have mode of ignorance, it can never be happiness, either at the beginning or the end. Remember, goodness means passion at the end, bitter in the beginning. Did it say passion?
Yes.
Yeah, passion is sweet now, bitter later. Goodness means bitter now, sweet later. Later. Mode of ignorance means never sweet, always bitter. So they just, with time, just see that that's the way it is. Because they don't have the passion to do something more. They just intellectualize it within ignorance. Chanakya Pandit says that if an honest person deals with a great cheater, it is necessary for him to become a cheater also. Not for the purpose of cheating, but to make his preaching successful. Right? You can't deal honestly with dishonest people. But people are dishonest for their own gain. Right? So you're dealing in a way in which they'll come across Krishna consciousness. That's the whole point. You can say, oh, this is not good and this and that. But then the point is what's not good? Oh, we're supposed to be honest. We're supposed to be straightforward. Go ahead. Give me a name. Go ahead. Who's successful in the world? Give me names that they're open, honest, straightforward. You know what I'm saying? So it's just talk. Is that what I'm saying? The point is you have to deal with people according to how they are. You talk how they talk, you deal how they deal. That's how it works. And then, that will then, how you say? That will then work. But otherwise, if you don't use that, then you have a problem that people are going to take advantage. They're not going to be able to, how you say? What would be the... They're not going to understand what you're talking about. But at the same time, you're not cheating because you're not doing it for yourself. That makes sense. But you're following within the culture. So it's a very, very fine point. Right? In other words, you can't be honest with dishonest persons. It doesn't mean you're being dishonest with them. You're just not being honest. Does that make sense? That's the point. Doesn't mean being dishonest is okay. It means you're not honest. Because they can't handle honesty. They don't want honesty. They don't like honesty.
They don't exploit others and they don't allow themselves to be exploited.
Yes, like that. So that's the point. You're not exploited, because if you tell the truth, you'll be exploited, so you don't. But that's only with people that will exploit. If you have somebody who's actually honest, you can be honest.
Huh?
Yes, yes. Narad Muni continued. When Hiranyakashipu's servants brought the boy Prahlad back to the Gurukula, the place where the Brahmins taught the boys, the priests of the demons, Shanda and Amarta, pacified him. With very mild voices and affectionate words, they inquired from him as follows. Srila Prabhupada points out, Shanda and Amarta, the priests of the demons, were eager to know from Prahlad Maharaj who the Vaishnavas were that came to instruct him in Krishna consciousness. Their purpose was to discover the names of these Vaishnavas. In the beginning, they did not threaten the boy, because when threatened, he might not identify the real culprits. Therefore, they very mildly and peacefully inquired as follows. So here, you could say they're using good qualities. This is the method. But the point is, they're using this method for their own purpose, right? Because they're teaching who's friends and enemies. They want to find out the names of the enemies. Right? That's the difficulty. Sanda Namarka said, Dear son Prahlad, all peace and good fortune unto you. Kindly do not speak lies, just reply with the truth. These boys you see are not like you, for they do not speak in a deviant way. How have you learned these instructions? How has your intelligence been spoiled in this way? Srila Prabhupada comments, Prahlad Maharaj was still a boy, and therefore his teachers thought that if they pacified the little boy, he would immediately speak the truth, revealing the secret of how the Vaishnavas came there to teach him the lessons in devotional service, right? Because the child doesn't know the ways of the world, so they don't know when somebody's being, you know, if someone's nice, then you like them. They're not being nice, you don't like them. So like this, but because he knows Krishna consciousness, he actually knows the ways of the world, right? So he sees it's not about Krishna consciousness. There's some other motive behind it. It was surprising, of course, that in the same school the other boys of the Daityas were not polluted. Only Prahlad Maharaj was supposedly polluted by the instructions of the Vaishnavas, right? Because if someone was coming there and preaching, then all of them would be affected, but only Prahlad is, so that's why they're a little confused. The main duty of the teachers was to inquire who those Vaishnavas were that came to teach Prahlad and spoil his intelligence. Sanda Namarka continued, O best of your family, has this pollution of your intelligence been brought about by you or by the enemies? We are all your teachers and are very eager to hear about this. Please tell us the truth. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. They thought, if he gives the name of some Vaishnava, we will identify that person, bring him to the assembly of the king and beat him. Prahlad Maharaj thought, these fools cooked in some samsara think I am a stupid boy. Then he spoke. So, cooked in samsara, yeah. So that's the problem. Is that that's funny. Cooked in samsara. So then he's going to give a whole different Prahlad Maharaj replied, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose external energy has created the distinctions of my friend and my enemy. By deluding the intelligence of men, indeed I am now actually experiencing this, although I have previously heard of it from authoritative sources. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with a living entity, because of his devotional service, one becomes a pundit and does not make distinctions between enemies, friends, and himself. Intelligently, he then thinks, every one of us is an eternal servant of God, and therefore we are not different from one another." Srila Prabhupada comments. When Prahlad Maharaj's teachers and demoniac father asked him how his intelligence had been polluted, Prahlad Maharaj said, "As far as I am concerned, my intelligence has not been polluted. Rather, by the grace of my spiritual master and by the grace of my Lord Krishna, I have now learned that no one is my enemy and no one is my friend. We are all actually eternal servants of Krishna, but under the influence of the external energy, we think that we are separately situated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead as friends and enemies of one another. This mistaken idea has now been corrected, and therefore, unlike ordinary human beings, I no longer think that I am God and that others are my friends and enemies. Now I am rightly thinking that everyone is an eternal servant of God, and that our duty is to serve the Supreme Master, for then we shall stand on the platform of oneness as servants." So he's thinking, they're saying, how did this consciousness become polluted? But he's saying, no, mine's not. Right? It's others who don't understand Krishna consciousness, their intelligence is polluted. So that's why Sundar and Marka, they're thinking one thing, and Prahlad's thinking these guys are, you know, they're fools, right? They're the ones that their intelligence is polluted, right? So now they're very technically skilled in knowledge, right? So their skill in knowledge, their skill in teaching, you know, their skill in how you say this, ritualistic performances, these are all very excellent. But they're still fools because they don't know Krishna consciousness. Well, Prahlad Maharaj is a boy, and so he's only learning a certain amount of this knowledge that they have, but actually he's the pundit. He's the scholar. That's what's important to know. Right? Making, you know, how you say, fools cooked in samskara, that's easy enough. Like that. There's tens of thousands of institutions all over the world that are cooking. Right? You know. But to make someone a pundit, that's the real thing. That's what you want. Demons think of everyone as a friend or enemy, but Vaishnavas say that since everyone is a servant of the Lord, everyone is on the same platform. Therefore, a Vaishnava treats other living entities neither as friends nor as enemies, but instead tries to spread Krishna consciousness. Right? Because we'll say, oh, deals with everyone equally, so everybody's a friend. That would be the mundane way of approaching it. Everybody's nice, you're always like that, so it's sentimental. But here it's that they're not friends, they're not enemies. They're all the servants of the Lord, therefore then you deal. So according to how they deal with you is how you'll reciprocate. Right? They deal with you in a friendly way, you reciprocate that in a friendly way. Right? They deal in an inimical way, then you protect yourself. So it's not a sentiment, but at the same time it carries all the culture, because the other one, the culture is there to a point, but how far is it taken? We can say that the general intellectual class may say no, but we're supposed to be so nice and friendly and all that, but how many are, you know, actually how many are? That's the point. People that are that sentiment continuously, everybody will respect that they're nice, but no one's going to follow. You know what I'm saying? They just don't. You know, it's just like there is one set of pictures, or even one picture of one incident where you have I'm not even sure who's out there, but it can't be. I don't think it's regular police. I think it's the paramilitary or that. They're there for riots. And they're there with their guns. and their guns are loaded and pointed. And there's a few people who are going along and putting flowers in the ends of their guns. Like that. So that's the whole point. It's, okay, now these are taking it to that extreme. Do we see a picture like that before that? Do we see a picture like that after that? Right? So that picture was 50 years ago. Right? So nice to stand on that one picture and say, oh, we're supposed to be friends with everybody. And nice, but who's doing it? Right? Because if that was the case, then all these intellectuals, they would be watching rom-coms. But they're not. They're watching Art House, where basically it always ends up bad. No? Yes.
I think this picture could be taken only in America, because Russia or China, it wouldn't work.
No, they probably, you know, you put the flower in and then they shoot you. Yeah. Shoot you before
when you approach.
No, they shoot you. Yeah. Yeah, because the Chinese one is that, you know, they're standing in front of the tank and then they just run them over. Right? Yeah, but that's my point, is that also they're the only ones that say stuff like that. I don't think Russians say that, Chinese don't say that. Like that. You know, so I think the Chinese take the Art House ending to another level, because everybody dies in the Chinese world. Everybody dies, and they have to. Why would they not die? So, okay. Demons think of everyone as a friend or enemy, but Vaishnavas say that since everyone is a servant of the Lord, everyone is on the same platform. Therefore, a Vaishnava treats other living entities neither as friends or enemies, but tries to spread Krishna consciousness, teaching everyone that we are all one as servants of the Supreme Lord, but are uselessly wasting our valuable lives by creating nations, communities, and other groups of friends and enemies. Everyone should be friendly for the service of the Lord. Everyone should praise another service to the Lord and not be proud of his own service. This is the way of Vaishnava thinking. So here's where the culture comes in. Because they say, oh no, but that'll be so impersonal, so dry. No, but this is how it's applied. Right? Vaikuntha thinking. There may be rivalries and apparent competition between servants in performing service, but in the Vaikuntha planets, the service of another servant is appreciated, not condemned. This is Vaikuntha competition. There's no question of enmity between servants. Everyone should be allowed to render service to the Lord to the best of his ability, and everyone should appreciate the service of others. Such are the activities of Vaikuntha. Since everyone is a servant, everyone is on the same platform, is allowed to serve the Lord according to his ability. So that way there's an equality, they're all on the same platform of doing service, but according to their nature and abilities, they're rendering service. So there is distinction within non-distinction. Because in the West, it's either you make distinction or you make no distinction. But no, it's that within indistinction, there's distinction. So within the transcendental, there is you know, personal. Within no senses, there is engagement of the senses. Right? Some sense. That's where the confusion comes in. Yeah, but the thing is you see they improve in the quality when they come back. So it must be after seeing the cows they become purified, and then their piety increases, and then they're better at their jalpa.
Jalpa.
So this morning, because we heard them going this way,
yeah,
and we heard the other group coming back, so we were comparing them. But now when these come back, they're doing quite well. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Premanandi.